The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Gmar tov, shana tova, shavua tov. I don't know how we start the week on a Wednesday.
I don't know how you start a week on a Wednesday when it's almost ready to conclude. Either way, I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful chag and that life has returned to semi-normal. I don't know what normal is anymore because
I think we use the word usual.
Oh, usual. We don't use the word normal.
Yeah,
I
think we use the word usual. Yeah, I mean, Prime Minister Netanyahu actually celebrated his 70th birthday on Monday on Simchat Torah here. I was just intrigued to see how he went about celebrating, besides all the greetings and wishes that he received, including a letter from President Donald Trump. He actually got together with members of his original team when he was a commander in the IDF General Staff Reconnaissance Unit, the Sayeret Matkal. And aside for two individuals who have since passed away, the entire team that he commanded turned up to mark 50 years since they served together back in 1969. And I think that's an amazing way to celebrate 70 years, a 70th birthday, and also to, of course, celebrate some amazing achievements that they carried out during their years as soldiers in Sayeret Matkal.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, I did see the letter from Donald Trump saying a handwritten part that says "You're great," which is it's just so funny. I don't know. It's
he does look good for 70, though.
He does. He does look good for 70. And that's married to Sarah,
trying to run a country.
Not an easy country. I mean, the guy should look 100 at the minimum.
Well, apparently there are more than a few people who think that he does look good for 70. And I've kind of recused myself from judging about his good looks or not good looks, but he clearly has a lot of energy for somebody of 70 years old, and apparently, at least according to Howard Squared, he does look good for 70.
No, I definitely think he does. And as I say, even more so knowing that that he spent all these years married to Sarah. All right, Prime Minister Netanyahu has returned the mandate for forming a government back to President Rivlin on Tuesday night. Wow, wow. So here we go.
Yes.
Now what?
So, well, no surprising. In fact, it was actually returned on Monday night, immediately after Simchat Torah came out, apparently within 2 hours of the Chag. And of course, bearing in mind that in Israel, Monday night, we were already over the holiday. Mm. And so he immediately returned the mandate to President Rivlin. This was 2 days earlier than the mandate had been due to expire. So the expiry, I think, would have been today. And so he decided already on Monday. I mean, the writing had been on the wall already for some time that he was not going to succeed in forming a coalition at all, and that we effectively had a stalemate situation. And so what we're expecting now, according to those who know these things, is that the president will actually hand the mandate over to Benny Gantz. That's expected sometime this evening. So I'm not quite sure if a meeting has been arranged for the president with Benny Gantz, but apparently the expectation is that he will this evening be formally charged with forming a coalition. I think it was Albert Einstein who said that insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting to achieve different results. And I know that some famous sports teams do abide by that. They do try that out. But in our case, it really does seem insanity because there seems absolutely no prospect at all of Benny Gantz forming a government unless he has some sort of secret in mind which will convince the Likud and Prime Minister Netanyahu to join a coalition under his leadership. And frankly, that seems to be quite a remote possibility. Prime Minister Netanyahu did release a video when he returned the mandate to President Rivlin, in which he complained that Gantz refused to negotiate with him. And apparently, according to what was in this video, and Netanyahu said that in addition to what was known to the general public, he had actually tried some secret steps in order to build a unity government. So things were going on behind the scenes where he tried to build a government with Gantz. But it seems clear to all of us, even those who are not familiar with some of these secret things that were going on, that any idea that Netanyahu would have put forward would have involved him holding the leadership position, the prime ministerial position. And I think that, as far as I understand from where Gantz is coming, that as an outset, that as a starting position was never really going to be acceptable. So I don't really know where that leaves us now, because unless Benny Gantz really has some secret joker up his sleeve, which he'll now produce and somehow manage, magically convince the Likud and Prime Minister Netanyahu to form a coalition government under the Kahol Levan leadership, I don't see this going anywhere at all. And as I understand things, Gantz will now be given that three-week period in order to give him the opportunity to form a government. And I just wonder whether Rivlin has already jumped to the obvious conclusion in three weeks' time, which is the mandate comes back to him. What next? And I think that this is where things really start to get a little nervy, because people are now starting to talk about another election, which seems to me to be really crazy. And there are already surveys going out in order to determine how people would vote. And surprise, surprise, there is really very little change. The latest survey that I saw suggests that Kahol Levan will still be the leading party if people went to the polls today, that Likud would still be one seat behind, although each of those parties would gain one additional seat at the expense of the ultra-Orthodox parties. There are slight movements, one seat here, one seat there. But overall, the lie of the land really is unchanged from what we have today. So somehow I feel that I don't know whose responsibility this will be. Perhaps it's President Rivlin. Perhaps he's got to knock heads somehow. But we somehow have to get a government together without going to another election, because another election is really not going to prove anything. It's not going to change anything. And so we might as well just work with what we have at the moment.
Does the president not have any powers to force a unity government? I mean, I know he's tried and I know he's got them together and pushed them to meet, but does he not have power beyond that?
I don't think that the president has the power to force the formation of a unity government, because that would seem to be a highly problematic sort of move. If you force people who really don't want to govern together, then you're actually creating a problem even before you set out on that road. So the idea is for the president to somehow cajole the parties into coming to an agreement between themselves, even if it's just something short term, even if it's a government that will be in existence for a year or two, just in order to get over this particular hump that we have with the prime minister's legal case hanging over his head, and with the country not sure how to respond to the situation. I think that once the legal position of Netanyahu becomes clearer, I think that not only the politicians will be clearer in their response, but I think also the country will have a clearer indication of how they wish to respond to that situation. I think it would be helpful, even if we got some sort of a government together, that would just allow us to get over the next year or two and allow the legal situation to be resolved in one direction or the other, just to move on, because at the moment, unfortunately, the stalemate is being hugely damaging for our country.
My favorite part of the election negotiations so far has been when Shas, or the leader of Shas, the Svadi religious party, offered, in fact, Lieberman a place in heaven if he joined the coalition. I didn't really know it was up to him to assign those places in heaven.
We'll talk about offering portfolios. I mean, that would be a portfolio that we've never heard of before, right?
I think Lieberman was just worried that he wanted him to take up that position sooner rather than later.
Perhaps that was the idea. That was the secret message behind the offer. Yeah. But
exactly. We'll help you get there. Stick with us. You'll get there very soon. Crazy.
This has clearly become a bit of a joke. It's become a bit of a joke because as I say, it's not only the entertainment value that we have, and the fact that on the international stage, we really are not presenting ourselves very positively at all. But there are some really practical issues that have been stuck as a result of no government information. And you know, I've mentioned some of them before. The budget cannot be passed. We can't have any changes to the current budget situation. Certain appointments cannot be made, judicial appointments and other government appointments. There are a lot of policy issues which are simply stuck and can't be moved forward. And clearly this can't be a good thing for us.
No, it certainly can't. Let's see what happens now. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about is that Israel has the fifth number of millionaires per capita in the world. How many millionaires does Israel actually have?
Well, this is a list of millionaires that have been published. This is Credit Suisse Research that have published their global household wealth report. And as part of that, they talk about the number of millionaires that each country in the world has. I think there's a list of 23 countries. So not all countries, but a list of 23. And they talk about the absolute number of millionaires and also the number of millionaires in relation to the population. And this is where Israel really looks very good. Fifth on the list of the highest number of millionaires per capita in the world, following Netherlands, Hong Kong, Norway, and Portugal. Overall, Israel has apparently 131,000 people who have $1 million or more in personal wealth, according to this particular research. That obviously compares to the U.S., which has the highest number of absolute millionaires, 18,600,000 millionaires in the United States, which is an interesting number, followed not so closely by China, which has 4.5 million millionaires, and then followed by Japan, which was a little bit of a surprise to me as well, which has about 3 million millionaires. But interestingly, if you would wind the clock back 15 or 20 years, I'm sure that Israel would not have featured at all on a list like this. And so obviously there's been a lot of a huge increase in personal wealth, at least in the hands of certain people in the Israeli economy. And I think that this is in no small measure due to the high-tech industry, where we've seen these huge exits and people making a great deal of money out of fantastic technological inventions, which the world has obviously become very interested in and been prepared to pay a lot of money to buy into. So it was just a statistic that I noticed, which was very unusual, something that we don't usually speak about, also something that people wouldn't expect from Israel. So that's really how the Israeli economy has been affecting people. And of course, out of that list of 23, Israel's bottom of the list in terms of the absolute number of millionaires. But when you compare it to the population, apparently Israelis are doing quite well, or at least the upper ends of the Israeli economic echelon, who apparently are doing pretty well out of this. So it was just something interesting that caught my eye.
Absolutely. We've only got 2 minutes left, but the Chagim, the festivals ended in Israel, in fact, on Monday night, and the rest of the world it's Tuesday night. But there's still an interesting tradition called Second Hakafot that takes place in Israel on Monday night. Fascinating and a completely different kind of an energy. What is the impact, however, of the Chagim, of the festivals on Israel?
Well, the impact of the Chagim on Israel is clear. People take off holiday. The economy effectively grinds to a halt. It's very, very low key. It kind of reminds me a little of the December, summer, Christmas period other parts of the world, or even the winter Christmas period in the Northern Hemisphere, where a lot of people close down. And that's really what it feels like in Israel. Schools are, of course, on holiday. The schools will return back today, even though yesterday was already a working day. But the schools will return today. But generally there's a fantastic feeling. And it was interesting that I saw that there were 2.5 million visitors who went to the Kotel over the Chagim period. 2.5 million. I mean, that's a fantastic number and a huge increase over previous years. And it just shows that the whole concept of Aliyah LeRegel, the concept of going up to Jerusalem in order to celebrate the festival, is alive and well and living in Israel. And we certainly see people visiting Israel over that time. And of course, you mentioned the second Hakafot. Simchat Torah was celebrated in Israel on Sunday night and Monday. So the actual Hakafot were on Sunday evening and during the day on Monday. And then it's traditional on Monday evening, once the Chag is out, once the festival is out, for people to gather in town squares and in halls and in locations together around Israel, and to have a musical Hakafot. So to have bands playing and to bring the Sifrei Torah, the various scrolls of the Torah from various different shul affiliations with the different styles of the Sifrei Torah, bring them all together to really dance. The Hakafot go on for hours and hours and hours with the music and dignitaries and everybody dancing together. I think it's a fantastic way of bringing the community together and to celebrate the end of the Chagim, which is now what we have. And so apparently it's back to work for all of us.
Amazing. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow. And Sign says, I thought that to be a millionaire in Israel, you either have to arrive there as a billionaire or start up some high-tech company that few understand so that you could sell it off to an American giant. It's 8 o'clock.